Welcome to a second edition of Banter with B Mills. This time we're going to go into the pro wrestling realm, and we're going to discuss the Mount Rushmore of pro wrestling. We have a couple different lists I want to debate. And of course, Mount Rushmore has five presidents on it, so we'll debate those lists. The first list I want to debate, a couple different lists. First list I want to debate is going to be the Mount Rushmore of superstars, top superstars in the WrestleMania era. So basically for the last, since 1985, so the last 33 years in that era, because that's the era that I grew up in. Before that, it was a little bit before my time. So we're going to do the WrestleMania era super top superstars from 1985, Mount Rushmore of pro wrestling overall superstars, the top guys that belong at Mount Rushmore. So of course, the first one you would have to start, you can't start a Mount Rushmore of WrestleMania, of the WrestleMania era, without, of course, the immortal Hulk Hogan. You know, he headlined the first seven, eight WrestleMania straight as the, you know, main event at those, except for four where Macho Man Randy Savage won the belt in the tournament, but he was on the cover art with Andre the Giant, and he actually wound up participating, helping Savage win at the at the end of that match. So first person definitely is the immortal Hulk Hogan. Like I said, he ran roughshod over WF at that time, now WWE. And definitely, not only that, but he also had that resurgence from 1996 to about 1998 with Hollywood Hulk Hogan as the top heel in the business for that three-year run. And then he was the top babyface, you know, for that 7-8 year run. He was a champion for four straight years from 84 to 88. You know, wrestling was at its golden era in the early to mid to late 80s, and he was the man. So he definitely had to put Hulk on it, did it as a face and as a heel. The second guy, of course, would be Ric Flair, Nature Boy Ric Flair. He was the flag bearer for the NWA, carried on his back when they were competing against WF at that time. You know, he was the guy. He was a champion, 16-time world champion. He was the champion at that time. Arguably the greatest stable, in my opinion, in history. The Four Horsemen, he was the leader of that stable, greatest faction. They were the first cool heels. I mean, they were truly heels, beating up people, jumping people, but people were truly cheering. They were my favorite stable of all time, no question. He was the leader of that, carried NWA in the 80s, into WCW in the 90s, and he was just, you know, arguably the greatest heel of all time, arguably the greatest worker of all time, arguably the greatest talker of all time. So Ric Flair belongs on there. Of course, the next guy would be The Rock. Now, we all know what he's done, the biggest star in Hollywood now, but in wrestling, he was arguably the best overall guy as far as talking, in-ring performance, just being able to do it all. As a face, as a heel, he did it all. I mean, a lot of people say he's one of the greatest talkers, but when you look at his matches are legendary against Stone Cold Steve Austin. Great match with him. Great match with Triple H. Great matches with Mankind. Great matches with Kurt Angle. I mean, The Rock, he could do it all. I mean, he was definitely, in my opinion, the greatest talker of all time. But he was also one of the best in-ring performers, which makes him one of the best overall guys. He was one of the most entertaining guys. You know, he carried the business probably from like 1999 when Steve Austin got hurt, 2000, 2001, and then he was pretty much gone by 2002. Came back, did those three WrestleManias, 27, 28, 29 with John Cena. And, you know, for my money, you know, the most entertaining, most overall, my favorite wrestler of all time is The Rock. And he definitely went over Mount Rushmore. The fourth guy, Stone Cold Steve Austin. I mean, he's definitely one of the top guys. People argue he's the greatest superstar of all time. I'll have that debate for another day. Is it him? Is it Hogan? Is it Rock? But, I mean, his run on top was really only 3 years, 97, 98, 99, before he got hurt. Came back 2001. It was pretty good, but he had to turn face, had to turn heel because Rock was the number one guy. So, and you know that's the case because, ironically, Rock left to do a movie. So, I mean, if Austin was still the guy at that time, he wouldn't have had to turn. He wouldn't have had to turn heel, but he did. But he was one of the best guys in that era. He helped WWE overcome WCW in the Monday Night Raw's rating. He was a guy that was the spearhead of that. He was a guy that was leader at that time. He was number one guy at that time in the company, and he definitely deserves to be on a Mount Rushmore of, you know, top superstars. And then the fifth spot was the hardest one to come up with. A couple of different guys I've debated: Undertaker, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart. But the guy I'm going to go with overall that should deserve to be on there is John Cena. He carried the company for 12 years. in that era now, he's kind of transitioned himself into movies, but he definitely carried the company, headlined multiple WrestleManias after WrestleManias, really from WrestleMania 20 when he got started against the Big Show. He started the show with that, and then he headlined main event at 21, you know, multiple WrestleManias from 21 all the way through 28, 29 with The Rock. You know, that was his last main event, but he's been a prominent role on other ones, all of the WrestleManias since then, but of course Roman Reigns, I remember him to be the guy, but for that stretch, Cena was the guy. He wasn't able to reach the commercial success of The Rock or Austin. He wasn't able to reach the, you know, popularity of Hogan or Flair, but he was a little bit notch below all of those guys in the wrestling world and, you know, mainstream. But he's actually parlayed himself into a nice little acting gig where he's a pretty good actor. He's still no more of the wrestling guy than actor, but he's had a couple of good roles in different movies and had success in the last, you know, couple of years here. So John Cena definitely belong on that list. He was the leader of the Ruthless Aggression era. He was the guy. He was the number one guy. So you got to give his credit. So just to recap, the Mount Rushmore of top wrestling superstars of the WrestleMania era, in no particular order: Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and John Cena. The next one I want to go to list would be the top tag teams of all time. You had several different tag teams that deserve to be on this Mount Rushmore. You got hundreds and hundreds of tag teams, but we're going to delve into that there, the top tag teams of all time. So, all right, so you couldn't have a Mount Rushmore tag team without having this team. The Legion of Doom, a.k.a. the Road Warriors, Hawk and Animal. I mean, they carried Georgia Championship Wrestling. They carried AWA. They carried NWA. They carried, when it went to the WF, they became a great tag team there with the champions there. And they also, you know, had held championships in New Japan. And also, they also carried, when they came back, to WCW. So they were the only guys that do it in NWA, the AWA, and WF. That in all three major promotions in the United States. They also were IWGP tag team champions. They were the most devastating team. There's been many teams that try to duplicate them, a.k.a. Demolition, Power of the Pain, Ascension, but nobody be the Road Warriors. The face paint, the mohawks, the spike shoulder pads, I mean, the music when they were in WWA, AWA and NWA, and then of course when it came to WWF later on. But they definitely deserve to be on a Mount Rushmore of tag teams. In my opinion, the greatest tag team of all time. Another tag team that had great success was the Steiner Brothers, Rick and Scott Steiner. They had great success in WCW. They were the tag team there. And, of course, New Japan. And then also they went to WF for about a year, and they became champions there. So, you know, they were phenomenal, both collegiate amateur wrestlers, you know, all-conference amateur wrestlers, Rick and Scott. I mean, they were legit, you know, definitely legit tag team. They could really, you know, take you down to the mat. The Frankensteiner with Scott Steiner, the Bulldog, the high tag Bulldog off the top rope with Rick Steiner. I mean, they were just phenomenal, and they were real live brothers who were actually not even a year apart. That's the crazy part about it, 11 months apart, if I'm not mistaken. But they were a phenomenal tag team, the Steiner Brothers. Definitely deserve to be on Mount Rushmore. The third team is the Dudley Boys. Definitely deserve to be on there. The most decorated tag team of all time, most championships. They were to do it in ECW, WWE, TNA, and New Japan. So, like the Steiners and like the Road Warriors, they were doing it multiple national promotions, and they all have in common that they were all WWF Tag Team Champions, WWE Tag Team Champions at some point, and they all New Japan Tag Team Champions at some point. So they all have that in common. One of the best tag team moves with the Doomsday Device that the Road Warriors had, the 3D, Doomsday the 3D tag team move with the Dudley Boys. I mean, it was phenomenal. My favorite tag team finish, that it took both guys working together to pull that off. They were great. Every federation they went, every company went to, were excitement, the gimmicks with the tables and all that, you know, the TLC match with the Dudleys and the Hardys. The Edge and Christian and the Hardys, they were just a phenomenal tag team. Definitely deserve to go to Mount Rushmore tag teams. The third group and fourth are pretty much, you know, synonymous with each other and the Dudleys. You got the Hardy Boys, Matt and Jeff, you know, the greatest possibly high-flying tag team since the Rock and Roll Express, but they were taken to another level. I mean, they were just phenomenal in TLC matches, regular matches. They've guys, the brothers, I think they're 3 years apart in age, were just phenomenal in WWE. They get great TNA. They were just phenomenal tag team with the tag team, you know, moves. They also were pretty good at tag team moves as well. Poetry of Motion, when Matt would drop down, Jeff would go and run on his back and hit the person in the corner. They just have phenomenal moves. Team Extreme brought excitement and rock star mentality. The only guys I could think of that really got like that Road Warrior pop when they came out, because they were just so popular and so over. Just phenomenal tag team. Last team, of course, Edge and Christian. I think they were possibly the most well-rounded of all these tag teams. Edge and Christian can actually really go in the ring. They could be faced, they could be healed. They were comedic, they were vicious. They had all the traits. I mean, they had it all. They could talk on the mic, they could do it in the ring. They could turn face heel. They would be serious, they could be joking. I mean, they had, you know, the whole thing as far as, and of course, they snide with the Hardys and Dudleys with the TLC matches. And just phenomenal tag team, and they were able to do it, you know, cover all genres and entertain. So just to recap, the Mount Rushmore tag teams, Road Warriors, the Steiners, the Hardys, the Dudleys, and Edge and Christian are the Mount Rushmore tag teams. In my last category I'm going to talk about today, the Mount Rushmore of factions. Now, this one is a highly debated one because, like tag teams, there's a ton of factions, hundreds of factions. But in my opinion, the top five factions, you know, Mount Rushmore factions in the WrestleMania era, you know, it comes down to a couple of them are easy, kind of like the, you know, the superstars, but the last couple were kind of hard, but tag teams are pretty cut and dry, but this one's a little bit harder. But of course, you got to start out with faction. You got to go with the Four Horsemen and the NWA. The original was, of course, Ric Flair, Ole Anderson, Arn Anderson, and Tully Blanchard, with J.J. Dillon as the manager. The second version was J.J. was still there, Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, and then Ole was replaced with Barry Windham. They had other reincarnations of it, but those are the top two incarnations of the Four Horsemen. They were the first cool heels. They were guys who people really cheered. They were so good that people cheered. It made everybody work, make it look like $1 million. You know, they all protected Ric Flair as the world champion, and at some one point, they all had the championships, the U.S. title, tag team titles. I remember Arn had the television title a couple of times. Tully also had it. Tully also had a national heavyweight championship. So they carried all the belts at certain points in their run. Like I said, they were so good that everybody started to cheer them because they were so good to be bad. It was kind of like a Roddy Piper type deal, where they were so good you had to love to hate them. And they were the best, my opinion, faction, which other ones pretty much spawned from DX, NWO, I mean, but the Four Horsemen were the forerunners, were the godfathers of the faction, and they definitely deserve to be on a Mount Rushmore of factions. Mentioning other factions, I just mentioned two of them right there. NWO with Hall, Nash, and Hogan in 1996, that was monumental, especially with Hogan being a face, you know, for all those years, and then turning, he had to really turn because people were starting to boo him in WCW, because he wasn't really the original WCW guy. So he came in, I think, 94, but by 96, I mean, he really started to boo him, because he was from technically from up north in New York, which they called WF at the time. But he definitely was, you know, the catalyst. Without him, it doesn't go. But you had Hall and Nash, outsiders who were Diesel and Razor Ramon and WWE. So they came over as the outsiders, added Hogan, and those three guys became a phenomenal tag team. I think when they added the Giant, that added something to it because you had the two biggest men in the company, and you got the other two guys. Hogan was the smallest guy, about 6'5", 6'6". He was the smallest guy at 275. Hall went about 6'7", 285, 290. And then Nash went about 6'10", maybe 320, 330. And then, of course, the Giant about 6'11", 7 feet, about 400 pounds at that time. So when they add that, the Giant, I think I really like that incarnation as well because I really gave him more than just three guys. I gave him two biggest guys in the company and two other guys who were pretty big themselves. They were phenomenal on the mic. They excited, you know, excitement from the crowd. They used to jump people, beat people down. It was just, and they became cheered because they were so cool. And with the black and white, it was such a simple thing, but those NWO shirts were the hottest thing in wrestling for a couple of years. I mean, they were just phenomenal NWO. The other faction, of course, DX with Shawn Michaels, Triple H, Chyna, and Rick Rude originally was that incarnation when they first started, just kind of degenerates and just kind of acting a fool. They were more juvenile. They were more, you know, silly acting. They were kind of like high school pranksters as far as the NWO was like a high school team, like a gang, but they were more kind of juvenile. They became a little more violent when Shawn Michaels went out with the back injury and Triple H had the reincarnation with him and X-Pac, Chyna, and the New Age Outlaws. They really became more of a gang then. They still were kind of comical, but they still were like legit. Okay, now they're a gang. So they had five guys, well, four guys and a woman who were, you know, legit badass. But, you know, they really became, you know, one of the best factions of all time because they had comedy, they could fight, they could wrestle, you know, they had seriousness, you know, they had a combination of all those things. So DX was very, very good faction. The other faction was Dangerous Alliance in WCW. They're not quite on the level as the other guys because they never really quite had the world champion in their faction. Neither did DX for that matter. Triple H never reached the zenith. But you did have Shawn Michaels in the first incarnation as a world champion with DX. So that's the thing about them. You know, it was spearheaded. Paul Heyman was the manager. You know, you had Rick Rude was the established superstar main eventer. You had Stone Cold was up and comer. You had Arn Anderson was a pretty good guy. Larry Zbyszko was a vet. And Bobby Eaton was the guy that bumped the rest. And they had a pretty good collection of guys that had success in other factions and other groups, but they came together and it was more of a organization, more of a common alliance to really try to take out Sting. You know, unfortunately, it never really reached the zenith. None of them ever really reached the zenith of winning the WCW title. Rick Rude, I think the highest he got was the US title. Arn Anderson was the TV champion. So they had moderate success, but they were definitely a forgotten faction. And the last one, which was really hard, the last two really, Dangerous Alliance was kind of hard because I was like, okay, what's the third? Because the first three, DX, NWO, and Horsemen, were the easy ones. Dangerous Alliance, I'm like, I had to kind of think about that one. And then the fifth one, which I really had to think about, would be you'd have to give it to the Shield. I mean, Rollins, Reigns, and Ambrose. I mean, they came in, you didn't know what to think of them. They came in, attacked Ryback. Everybody thought that they were defending bodyguards for CM Punk, which was the original idea, but they kind of spawned off to their own thing, wound up attacking him later anyway. And they were just three young guys that were fresh faces. Of course, Ambrose was Moxie, you know, on an independent scene. And of course, Seth Rollins was Black, Tyler Black. On they both had their own following, and everybody knew them from Indies. Roman Reigns is a fresh new face. You know, he was from the Samoan dynasty, you know, and so, but he was a fresh face. He was in, you know, he was in FCW and then NXT, you know, after that, you know, he hadn't been on the indie scene, but the combination of him with the power. And you had Ambrose the craziness, and Seth Rollins was the crazy high flyer bumper. It worked perfectly. And they soon became cheered. They were kind of like any other, you know, faction. At first, they were kind of booed, and then they became cheered. I mean, they beat everybody possible, all combinations of people. They won the tag titles. Ambrose won the U.S. title. And they were running roughshod for about 2 years. And then, of course, Seth Rollins did the betrayal when he became the champion. You know, later on, Money in the Bank, and him and Reigns had their run. Him and Rollins had their run. So, I mean, him and Ambrose had their run. So, you know, Shield was definitely, looking back, I mean, they were phenomenal. It was such a good concept, because they had tried this before with the NXT guys, when they did, when they had all the NXT guys before, when they had guys like the Core, and they had Nexus when they came in, but Nexus was like 7 or 8 guys. I mean, that scene with Nexus destroying everybody in the ring, commentators in the ring themselves, wrestlers, Cena's, Punk, was great. But one, I think that didn't work because there was too many guys, one. And then two, they never really won anything of consequence. I mean, Barrett went against Orton multiple times, but he never beat him. Went against Cena, he never beat him when it counted. So, and there was too many guys, and it was just too many of them. So they need to kind of condense it down. So the Shield was perfect when they came a year and a half, 2 years later, and they were perfect. 3 guys, 3 young guys, 3 relatively unknowns to this audience. You know, of course, Ambrose and Rollins were known outside, and both they were known in NXT anyway. But the combination of that, plus, you know, just the contrast of styles of all 3 meshed perfectly together, and they became very, very popular, and they definitely deserve a list on the Mount Rushmore of factions. So to go over that and to wrap up the show, the last list, the Mount Rushmore factions, the 4 Horsemen, you had DX, you had NWO, Dangerous Alliance, and The Shield. So that concludes this episode of Banter with B. Mills. Leave a comment, subscribe if you liked, and also suggest any other topics you think I could talk about. And I enjoyed this podcast, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Peace.